Welcome. This is the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast with host Rob Giannino, where we have great conversation with really awesome experts from within the fly fishing community. You see, the fly fishing lifestyle is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us. Check out flyfishingjourneys.com for more podcasts, and please subscribe on your favorite podcast player. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
Welcome to the next edition of the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast. I have a special treat for you, a two-part episode with one of the true gentlemen and thought leaders in fly fishing today, Derek Bird. This conversation was so fun and thought-provoking, we had enough material for two parts. No worries though, we're posting part two tomorrow, and depending upon when you're listening, it's probably already live. When you're done with part one, just head over to part two. I like to be mindful of the podcast length, as so many of you listen in your cars and on your commutes. Before we jump in, I do want to thank our sponsors, Cross Current Insurance, The Fly Fishing Show, and Norvice. Cross Current Insurance not only has fantastic insurance products, but are a great group of people. They are active anglers and are front and center in the fly fishing community, both at the shows and with their support from many great industry nonprofit organizations. In short, they provide insurance solutions for the fishing, hunting, and outdoor adventure industry. They are avid anglers and outdoor enthusiasts, so if you are a guide, a lodge, or manufacture boats, rods, boots, or any other gear for the outdoor industry, they built their insurance business to protect your passion. I personally know many guides and businesses that use their service and rave about them. Shoot them a call or drop them a message for more info. You can find them at crosscurrentinsurance.com. The show season just ended, and wow, was that a blast. I can't believe it's over and I have to wait a whole year to do it over again. The Fly Fishing Show presents such great value for a super inexpensive ticket. The nationwide show tour has six stops in major markets around the country. I always assume the majority of the guests come from regions around the show. While that in general is partly true, I met so many people who are now flying into different venues to take in the show for the whole weekend. Whether it be the indoor-outdoor feel of the Pleasanton, California show, or the western feel of the Denver show. You can go on and on with the New York, New Jersey, Boston, Pennsylvania, and Atlanta shows. There's something for everyone at all the shows. Seminars, casting presentations, destination talks, equipment manufacturers, fly tires, and tying demonstrations. Really, what the show needs is you. This is a sport that you love and has one of the best community networking structures in the world. I have met so many of my closest friends to date at a fly fishing show. I really mean it. What the show needs is you. Not only will you get great value and enjoyment from being there, but you will provide great value to the show because you provide a unique experience that only you can provide. That's the nature of a community. That's what the fly fishing industry and the fly fishing show is. It's a community. So please check out flyfishingshow.com for all the details and watch out for the 2024 dates and locations. Finally, here's a short message from my good friend Tim O'Neill of Norvice.
What makes the Norvice different than another system?
There are a lot of rotary fly tying vices out there. The Norvice is the only vice that will truly spin when you tie flies, and there's a big difference between rotating a vice slowly and spinning it at a bit of a faster RPM. And being able to spin the hook on a zero axis rotations opens up a lot of doors for us in the world of fly tying.
Tell me about the introduction of colors to the Norvice system.
When we obtained the company from Norm, he said to me just a very, very short statement. He said, you know, I always thought a colored Norvice would be a cool item. We brought out five colors, Radical Red, Sunset Orange, Shamrock Green, Liberty Blue, and Royal Purple. We have five colors along with the black that you're accustomed to seeing with Norvice, and we've been doing very well with those.
To find more information and their online store, visit nor-vice.com.
So as I mentioned, on the podcast today is Derek Bird, founding editor of Fly Fusion magazine. He writes the editor's column called Streamlines for each issue. He's also the co-host for Fly Fusion TV, as well as the producer responsible for content acquisition for the International Fly Fishing Film Festival, also known as IF4, which is seen around the world. You can actually see it on tour right now. Additionally, he's the author of a new book called Last Summer on the Sage. April Vokey says it's a riveting tale full of suspense that had me on the edge of my seat, anxiously turning each page to see what's around the river bend. First, Derek, welcome to the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast.
Thanks so much, Rob. That was quite an introduction. And I'm like just thrilled to be on your show and get a chance to chat with you a little bit. So it'll be, I'm excited.
No, it's definitely exciting to me. And as we just talked about, I was able to interview your brother, Chris, and Jennifer Bird, your sister-in-law, at the Pleasanton Fly Fishing Show. And they were a ton of fun. We talked about you a bit. We talked about the magazine some. And, you know, I've read your, you know, the streamlines in Fly Fusion magazine for so many years. So it's definitely a pleasure to talk to you about both your book and all the stuff that you got going on with Fly Fusion.
Yeah, that's very cool. And man, that's like, you know, you must be like a unicorn whisperer to get my brother and sister-in-law on your podcast. So I'm like, yeah, I don't know how many podcasts they've been on before, but I suspect not very many. They like the behind the scenes stuff. So good for you for getting them on.
Yeah, you know, as I was mentioning to you, we were just sitting there chatting. You know, we kind of struck up a connection that we went out to Indian food, I think a previous night or something at the Pleasanton Fly Fishing Show. And so we kind of struck up a little bit of a friendship there. And then we just happened to be in front of their booth and I invited them to be on the podcast and they said, no, we're not doing podcasts. But fortunately, the podcaster himself, Mr. Tom Rosenbauer, was standing right next to us and he heard this whole conversation and he kind of encouraged them a bit to be on. So I can thank Tom Rosenbauer.
Oh, man. Tom's an absolute gem. I love that guy. You know, he's been up to Canada before. And so we used to have like the Western Canadian Fly Fishing Exposition. And so he would come up to that sometimes. We'd have him up there. And then I've seen him a bunch in Orlando when I've been down there, which is, and it's always like whenever you run into him, whenever you have a conversation with a guy, he's always got something on the go. When he was releasing his latest, kind of one of the latest rods from Orvis, it was nice to be able to kind of test some of those rods that they're releasing. And man, there's some pretty slick rods that they have. So
I understand there's some even newer top secret rods coming down the pipe.
There are some newer top secret. Yeah, the last one that I was chatting with him about, and this would have been a few years ago, though I do, yeah, I've heard some top secret stuff coming down the pipe too. But there was a time where he was talking about the H3, which is it's a slick rod. Like it's, you know, and it's done, I'm sure it's done really well for them because it's, it's a super nice rod. But yeah, we were chatting about kind of like the feel of the rod and how it has, you know, very much a new feel to it. And really at that time, and I think that was, has it been about 4 years since the H3 has come out?
Sounds
at that
right,
time, yeah, at that time, there was really only kind of one other rod on the market that had like the same stability feel as the H3. And which is one of the things that they were marketing as something, you know, something that that didn't have a lot of kind of cross in it, which as fly anglers, we probably wouldn't have, you know, probably wouldn't think of that very much. But
yeah,
but when you cast the H3, you can really feel like kind of the stability in the rod. And really, there's not too many rods in the market that have that, that have gone with the, you know, the same kind of construction, you know, the same kind of deflection and things like that rod has. And so it's like, so it recovers quite quickly and it's like, and it really shoots out line nicely. And it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, not to get too technical. I'm sorry.
No, I love that. I love that. Chris, where are you calling in from? Give our listeners a bit of backstory about yourself, where you're calling in from and like kind of where you grew up.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm actually calling in from Vancouver Island. And for those of you in, you know, kind of south of the border, because Vancouver Island's up just off the coast. It's, you know, it's up in Canada, but I'm just like, Vancouver Island would be just north of the Olympic Peninsula. For those of you that are like steelheaders and stuff, kind of just north on the Canadian side of the border of that. Fly Fusion headquarters. So our headquarters is actually in Cranbrook, British Columbia, which is in kind of like Trout Central, as far as like, you know, if you want to go to a beautiful place and catch some, like in the Rockies, in the Canadian Rockies, and just catch some like absolutely amazing trout. That's like, it's a great place to go. And so anyways, and I always say like, and I don't know if this is true, so I don't know if I should say it, but I'm going to say it anyways, because if I have the disclaimer that it might not be true, then I'm not telling a lie. Right. So, but I think that we actually have like out front of Fly Fusion headquarters, or outside of the Fly Fusion office, we actually have what I consider probably the biggest elk hair caddis in the entire world. Wow. And I think that it's like, it's probably about, it's got to be around 8 feet. And it's not like, it's obviously not a real elk hair caddis. Like nobody's going to be throwing an 8 foot elk hair caddis, but it's a sculpture. Like it's a sculpture of an elk hair caddis. We worked with a local artist and,
okay.
And so that's out front. And the reason we chose an elk hair caddis was just like, man, it's such a classic trout pattern, right? If you're a dry yeah. fly, kind of like, if you love the West Slope cutthroat, there are just, you know, fewer patterns that that kind of have withstood the test of time as well as the elk hair caddis has. But I actually grew up in the Kootenays, which is where the headquarters are. And so I grew up in the Rockies and then eventually kind of migrated out west a little bit farther out to the coast. And this is where I reside now. And I don't know how many people south of the border are familiar with like Roderick Haig Brown, but this is like Roderick Haig Brown's, like when he was alive, like this is where I live in the same part of the island that he kind of lived and wrote and sure. and had a house right on the river type thing. And so this area that I live has become quite popular because of his writings. And so, yeah. So sometimes like middle of kind of summer, towards the end of summer, when salmon season really gets going, it can turn into a bit of a circus out on the river. And so I'm always looking for areas that don't have quite as many people, but yeah. So anyways, that's a little bit about where I'm from.
So BC now, was Alberta in there too, or mostly BC?
Oh yeah. Really good question. No, it's, I'm a BC boy, like right kind of all through and through, though I do fish in Alberta. I do quite a bit of fishing in Alberta on the Alberta side of the Rockies. But the place that I actually grew up is in something, and I don't think that this geographic structure actually stretches down to Montana, which is actually just below where I grew up. It's called the Rocky Mountain Trench, and it's got some of the, you know, some absolutely premier like fly fishing streams that kind of flow into a river called the Kootenay River, and then out of the trench also flows the Columbia River, which you're probably very familiar with because yep. It's a big name river that actually ends up flowing into the ocean in Portland, I believe.
Yep.
And but I grew up right near the headwaters of the Columbia. Yeah, in a place, it's called the Rocky Mountain Trench, which kind of on one side, kind of on the prairie side, has the Rocky Mountains. And then on the side to the west is the Columbia, something called the Columbia Range, which has about five different mountain ranges in it. And out of there is like just kind of endless trout water. It's about a 1500 kilometer, I don't know. Yeah. It's a 1500 kilometer trench, and it's got rivers, you know, just everywhere, right, coming out of it. And so that's the place that kind of nurtured me. That's the place that I, you know, grew up fly fishing and I, you know, I've done it ever since I've been a kid. Like, you know, it's kind of in my veins, like, and I suspect yeah. that it's geography partly, you know, kind of growing up in that area. It'd be hard not to be kind of a angler or hunter or like some type of a backcountry person.
Sure.
Because it's, you know, because it's super remote, but I was very, you know, blessed to have parents that were free range parents and that would kind of just let my brothers and I go out and explore in the summers. Right. And so, you know, even kind of pre-driver's license, you know, even when we were kind of like 11, 12 years old, you know, we'd tie our fly rods to our bikes with binder twine and, you know, kind of head out to, you know, the closest lake or the closest creek or whatever it was, right? And we'd yeah. just spend like hours and hours and hours out there catching trout. And then it kind of gets in your blood, right? It's something that I think if you've kind of grown up fly fishing, it's something that's hard to shake. It's like, but here I am halfway through my life, right? If I live to be 100, here I am halfway through my life. And I get just as excited to go and, you know, to go and, you know, spend an afternoon, you know, swinging flies for steelhead or, you know, skating flies for summer steelhead or, you know, yeah. getting out and kind of drifting flies for West Slope cutthroat or whatever type of, you know, coastal cutthroat. So it's just kind of part of what I've done kind of all along. And because I think fly fishing is such a steep learning curve and has so much kind of information that you can just drink from, I think that it's hard to ever get bored of it. Do you know what I mean? And if you right. do get bored, then you can just like, you know, fly somewhere like Iceland or Greenland, right, Rob?
Yeah. That's a crazy adventure we just got back from. But yeah, there's always someplace next to go or another fish or another species or another style of fly fishing to learn.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it, right? You know, if you've kind of done the single hand thing and, you know, single hand for trout, then, you know, if you want to go and get into spey or, you know, some double hand stuff, then you can go and kind of like relearn like just a ton of, you know, just a ton of stuff and learning how to cast, you know, two hand rods. And, you know, so if you as far as like kind of expanding territory, like, you know, the day and age that we live in, Rob, I mean, not just like, you know, not just fly fishing technology. I know we were talking a little bit about certain rods there a little bit ago, but it's not just fly fishing technology. It's like, you know, we can kind of fly wherever and kind of go wherever and, you know, spend time, you know, kind of wherever we want, right, on the planet. And there's so much, you know, there's so much media coverage and, you know, whether it be magazine or podcast or film or whatever, there's so much kind of like exposure right now whereas fly anglers, we can kind of go, oh, that's where I want to go next. Right. That's where I want to fish next. And so we get to do that. And so it's a very special time that we live in. I think sometimes we can, you know, I think sometimes I forget that, right. Just how absolutely, you know, fascinating the time period is that we live in. You know, if we're fly tires, we can, you know, we can kind of go online and kind of find, you know, whatever kind of fly pattern we want to tie, and we can do that, or we can go to a magazine and kind of look for recipes there or whatever, and we can learn from the best of the best. And then we can cross pollinate too, which is a really cool concept with fly fishing as well. Oh, you know, out east, kind of they're using this type of fly for this type of fish. Oh, I wonder if that type will work out west here too. And a lot of times it does, right? Like a lot of times it's like, oh, you know, this minnow pattern, I know they use it a lot kind of around the Great Lakes or something like that. Oh, I wonder if that'll work kind of, you know, on some of the streams like in my neck of the woods, right? Whether it be out on the west coast or whatever. And a lot of times those type of patterns they do. And sometimes you stumble across a pattern where you're like, you know what? I might be the only one out here using this pattern right now. And boy, it's like, it's catching a lot of fish, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I don't know if you feel that too. I mean, like you're kind of a trendsetter as far as where you're off to and kind of where you fish and stuff. But man, you must just be like I have the coolest job in the world. Cause like, I just, you know, you just got back from like, you know, a big trip up to Iceland and Greenland. And I'm just like, man, that's, you know, we live in kind of like an amazing time. We live in an absolutely amazing time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we kind of feel that way too with fly fishing journeys. Like life is a journey. Fly fishing is a journey. I'm really trying to kind of emulate what you guys are doing with your exposure through the magazine and IF4. I mean, some of those IF4s from back in the day were like so inspiring to me and my brother. We would like literally get a message on our email and like we'd start texting each other back and forth. Okay, IF4. And this is like well before I was even, you know, kind of part of the industry with the podcast and the online magazine now. I mean, this is going back years where we would get that email that the IF4 was coming and we would literally plan our evening to make sure we're at the fly fishing show so we can go watch that together because that was like our bond. Yeah. And so we're kind of like trying to shrink the world. I mean, it's such you can get to so many places in the world today that you could never get to before. Yeah. And you can kind of see like through an IF4 what's there. Maybe I want to go try that. And, you know, when you talk about the flies, you know, we were just back from Greenland. I think it might have been my last day. And, you know, I was using some of the gurglers or some of the patterns that we designed for Greenland per se, but I kind of forgot about them a little bit because they're like trout to me. So the char are like trout almost. So I was used to using like nymphs and I was trying to catch them with like stimulators and caddisflies. Nice. And it's like, what made you thought about putting a caddisfly on? I'm like, I saw rising fish. I mean, you know, right? I thought I saw a caddis hatch. So
yeah. And that's exactly it, right? When we go to these different places and fish with different guides, and they kind of maybe expose us to different concepts, It's like, oh man, I've never tried that technique before. And boy, that'll probably work. That'll work kind of back where I'm from as well. I did some fishing, kind of one of the perks of my job is, I'll get to, say a rod company will call up the magazine and say, hey, we're launching a new line. It's not out on the market yet. Do you want to, send somebody from the magazine up to Alaska with a few of our guys and test out the rod for a week? And you're like, okay.
That works.
Sure, I will. Right. Sure. Yeah. And so one time in particular, it was kind of the same thing that you're talking about. It was like, we'd fished for, down in the States, you guys call them silvers. Up in BC, we call them coho. We were fishing for silvers out on the Kenai Peninsula. And it was crazy because, the guy that I was fishing with, he was like as battle hardened as the Alaska tundra itself, right? Like he was just like this battle hardened, like seasoned guide. And he was getting us into so many coho. It was just amazing. And kind of like after a couple of days, it was kind of like, an arm hurt kind of scenario, right? We had caught all these big northern cohos. It was just beautiful. And then he went, hey guys, do you want to catch them on dries? And I was just like, do I want to catch them on dries? Yes, please.
Yes, for sure.
So, yeah. And so, so we put on these like, they were kind of big, ugly, like pink kind of patterns that we were like skating across the top of the water. And yeah. Oh my goodness. Right. You'd pound a fly, one of these dries into a deeper area. Cause the silvers, the coho, they kind of like the frog water kind of when they come into the rivers, right. They like kind of the, some of the transition waters that aren't quite as quick. And so you'd pound it into there and then you'd start just stripping this fly.
Yeah.
And you just see this V come through the water, right? And then this mouth open and then just inhale the fly.
That's awesome.
And you're like, and then, with silvers, with coho, they're so visual. Like once you've hooked them, they're jumping, like they're, doing these kind of aerials, just the acrobats that they're doing when you've hooked them. And so then I came back and, after a trip like that, I'm like, oh, well, I guess coho will take dries. And so then I'm like, back in my neck of the woods where everybody's swinging, kind of low and stuff for the coho. And then here I am kind of using some of the things that I've learned kind of up in Alaska with this battle hardened guide up there and using that and being successful down here too. Right. So it's kind of it's like that with information too. Right, Rob, which is, completely crazy, which is like, kind of the more information and we're just information fiends right now, right? As far as like, I'm just talking culturally where it's like, we can't get enough of kind of, whether it's podcasting or magazines or like, or IF4 or whatever. We love to just like, we're information sponges. Right. And so, so we kind of take all that in and then the cool part about kind of all the information that we're taking in is that, as kind of like human beings, what we do is we start to process that information by kind of like maybe tearing it and, in our brains, and maybe we toss some of it out. And then but the coolest thing is that we go, oh, when we take this piece of information and then we combine it with this, and then that's when something new is born, right? Maybe a new fly is born or something like that. That's like, to me, does it get any more exciting than a new idea or a new fly or like a new place to fish that we haven't seen before? I don't know if it gets more exciting than that, right? Like to me, that's what we'd consider cutting edge. Now I say kind of, is there anything more exciting than that? But then I'm also like, well, you know what? There's something really cool about nostalgia too, right? And kind of thinking back. And so sometimes when I go out fishing, I'll dust off my bamboo rod. That's right. I've got this absolutely beautiful bamboo rod that was built by a rod builder out of Alberta. And sometimes when there's this one little tiny stream on Vancouver Island that I can go and fish and it's completely secluded, there's nobody that's ever there. There's beautiful little trout in there. And I'll take my bamboo rod there and I'll fish that. Well, why would I do that when I have like all this brand new technology that's kind of at my fingertips, these rods that are, super stable, that'll fire out line. Well, why do I do that? Well, that's part of the human experience too, right, Rob? It's like, it's like we, you know, we not only are we always looking forward, but if we've had really good experiences kind of behind us as well, we want to tap into those as well. So that's something, you know, even I have to say, I don't fish as much with fiberglass, though I do have, you know, I do have a fiber, like some, I have one fiberglass rod as well. So sometimes I'll fish with glass as well too, right? And it, but it is that it's like, yeah, I'm looking forward, but I'm also like, well, no, I want to, you know, whether it's pay homage to kind of where fly fishing has come from, or whether it's like, just want to go back to kind of some of the moments of my youth, you know, where, you know, some of the rods that I used back then were like taking my dad's like old, do you remember those? I think they were like old yellow Fenwicks. Those, old enough to remember those, like those old yellow Fenwick glass rods?
Yeah. I mean, I started fly fishing later in life. I think I was like 28 almost. But I have seen them, like I have come across them through yard sales or stuff like that.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. The yard sale, right? Where you're finding like old gear. But yeah, like, you know, I used to take my dad's old yellow rod sometimes and go out fishing with that. Yeah. So it's like, you know, we just, and I keep getting back to this and I don't want to overstate it, but to me, it's like, man, every time we go out, you know, whether you catch fish or not, like whether it's been like, just kind of a, you know, like the other day, I snuck away just for like an hour or two in the evening just to catch the last light to just this little stream that's a little bit close to my house. And I went out and kind of had like a kind of one of those fish per cast days, right? Where it was just kind of like, it was just like, you know, every drift I had a fish come up that, you know, that I was hooking or, you know, at least had a chance at.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there's other days where you go out where it's like, where it's anything but that, right? Where you're like, you're working hard and you're like, you're switching flies like crazy to try to figure out, cause there's, you know, maybe no insect, no hatches that are kind of like happening. And so that's not helping out. And so you're kind of looking to try to figure out what's going on. And so maybe, you end up going with like a more of a terrestrial or something like that in order to see if they'll come up to that. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And so it's kind of like, you know, fly fishing is kind of comprised of like of that too, which all of a sudden you start to, you know, when I'm talking to you right now, now I'm like, oh man, now I got to write an article on this, right? Like now I got to write my next streamlines on this.
I love that.
I'm like, cause like, I'm just like, as we're kind of processing this, I'm like, oh man. So there's the contrast of like where we're going with kind of like the nostalgia, like where we've been, we've got access to all of that right now. And then there's like, you know, the good days where you're like kind of fish per cast, and those are balanced out by like the days where, and so fly fishing is so textured, right? It's like, it's just kind of like, you can have a day like that. Even the other day, like, you know, after I had that one day where I just was like, you know, it was so good. Well, the next day I thought, well, I'm going to go out and do this again, right? I'm sure it'll happen exactly the same way. So I did. So I went out and it didn't happen that way, right? Mm. Like I got three fish that evening in the last kind of hour of daylight rather than kind of the fish per cast that I had kind of the day before. And you're like, well, why was it like that? I don't know. Yeah. Like, I can't explain that, but boy, it's going to be, you know, fun to kind of like figure that out or maybe try to figure that out. Right. But anyways, that's what fly fishing is to me anyways, a part of it. Like it's kind of beyond, you know, definition at times, but that's part of it. I think that's part of the way that I would define it. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I can't wait to read that stream side. So,
right. Yeah, no. So yeah. Thank you. I'll have to credit you for the idea. Right?
I love it. I can't wait.
Bob and came up with his ideas. We were chatting. I think like years and years ago, guys used to always go and, you know, they'd go and hang out at like the local fly club, right? Where it's like, you know, all these fly tires would get together and tie flies. And people still do that. But then we also have other avenues now too, right? That's another thing too, right? Where we can, you know, where we can hop on and, you know, chat like this, or we can, you know, we can listen to podcasts and kind of like be flies on the wall in conversations with other people that fly fish too. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you. You go ahead.
No, that's great. And I love that. You know, it was the closest I've got to BC, and it's actually on my list, but I was heading up to the Northwest Territories and I went through Calgary and I spent a few extra days there with my son and met up with a local fly fisherman and went on the Bow. That was one of the rivers we went out on. And then we went for some bulls. We didn't catch one. I want to talk to you about bulls later. So
yes, let's talk bulls. Yeah.
I love that whole Pacific Northwest and the Canadian Rockies. And we didn't get up to the national park, but we did get to Kananaskis, which is the provincial park.
Yes. Yeah.
And probably on the other side of where you are.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. You actually got into a really nice area, right? To be able to fish the bow. It's, you know, for those people that haven't been up to kind of the Calgary area to fish, you can kind of picture like a smaller version of like Denver, I would say, right? Where it's like, you know, you've got kind of this almost prairie city, but in the distance, you can see the Rocky Mountains, right? And so once you get up into the foothills, there's, you know, tons of streams that are flowing out of the Rockies there. But anyways, yeah, so you getting to fish the bow is like, did you guys catch some big rainbows or did you
catch some big browns? We caught some nice rainbows. Got some nice rainbows. For I guess it was, can be super technical at times, and we didn't catch as many as we thought. It kind of like ebbs and flows. And but it was an amazing time. We fished the Old Man. We caught some cutthroat in there.
So in that area, so just kind of what you're talking about, when you get up into kind of the Kananaskis area, you'll see there, that's where kind of some of these streams are like flowing kind of out of the Rockies, and that will meet up with kind of like the Bow River, which is a bigger system. Mm-hmm. So I grew up like literally, and Fly Fusion headquarters is literally like kind of just on the other side of the Rockies from that. Now, when I say just on the other side, you know, you have to kind of weave your way through. So it's about a kind of 3.5 hour to 4 hour drive to get from, you know, Calgary to my hometown. So growing up in that area, you can imagine the Alberta side is actually a little bit more kind of populated than where I grew up. And so where I grew up, there's, you know, you can imagine that that when you trek into the Rockies, there's a lot of streams where you just don't see anybody, right? Where you start to really get away from crowds when you get up into kind of some of these more headwater streams. Now, some of the trout aren't quite as big up there, but to me that doesn't matter. Like, you know, I've had guides kind of apologize to me before, you know, when I catch like a small fish or something like that, where it's like, oh, you know, shoot, we're keying in, we're looking for the big ones, right? And you got that smaller one. I'm like, you know what? To me, that's the sign of a healthy stream though, right? Is when you have like all these different age classes in the stream where you might have like a, you know, really big trout that you have like the possibility at, or you get, you know, maybe some of the more juvenile trout as well, which is, you know, there's nothing wrong with that either. And then when you get up into kind of some of the headwaters, there's just not as much, they might not be as nutrient rich up in some of the headwaters. And so you don't get the same insect hatches. And as a result, some of the fish are a little bit smaller. What makes up for kind of that is that, you know, a lot of times you're fishing in areas where there's nobody, number one, and then you're fishing kind of like, when I say like right in the Rockies, I mean like you are literally at the base of like peaks, right?
Yeah, you get snow around you and everything.
Oh, exactly. And it's kind of like, and you're kind of like breathing all of that in because you, and I've said this before, maybe in some of my writings or something, but you feel, when you kind of get out in nature, and I used to think this as a kid, I don't think this as much anymore because I'm not quite as naive as I was when I was a kid. But sometimes when you'd go to a place and you'd hike through, you know, Deadfall, and, you know, when you're kind of out in the middle of absolutely nowhere, I used to think, I wonder if I'm the only person that has actually set foot on this piece of earth before.
Yeah.
And that's like, to me, that's a super humbling thought. Now, chances are there's probably somebody else that's hiked through there maybe, you know, a few years before, whatever. That to me is a super kind of humbling thought where it's like, yeah, no, I'm part of kind of what's going on up here. I'm not dominating it. I'm not in control of it. I just get to be kind of this bystander who gets to soak some of this in, right? And the way that I do that is through fly fishing. It's like I get up into those places, and then, you know, kind of the way that I interact when I get up in those places is I'll drift a fly and watch trout come up for it.
Right.
And then that kind of makes me feel alive. And I suspect that it's probably similar for you too, Rob, in the sense of, you know, why are you flying kind of, you know, all over the world doing what you're doing? And it's probably because it's kind of who you are. It makes you feel alive inside, yeah. Right?
Yeah, it's a passion.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. And we get to do that as flyinglers, right? We get to explore. We get to, you know, find these places that are off the beaten path. With like some of the filming that I've done through Fly Fusion Television and with the IF4, with the International Fly Fishing Film Festival, talk about kind of expanding, you know, expanding the territories. As the older you get, you know, as a kid, it's kind of like, well, you ride your bike a kilometer or 2 kilometers or 5 kilometers from your house and you try to find, you know, a stream or a lake. And then, you know, the older you get, you can kind of expand your territory a little bit and where you get to. And some of the most beautiful places that I've been have been the result of, you know, working with the magazine and kind of some of the filming we've done, whether it's, you know, taking helicopters into certain places that just, you know, see barely any traffic, or, you know, taking, you know, jet boats up into like places where people just don't get to go, and fishing like with just some extremely talented guides who are like, I was going to say, you know, put your fly here, put your fly there. One of my favorite guides that I've fished with, he works out of a place called Northern Lights Lodge, and his name's Skeed. But he, like, we got into this one stream after this, you know, massive ride up this fjord lake, and then getting into a jet boat and jet boating up this river and going like way into the middle of absolutely nowhere. You know, it looked like it might be kind of a technical stream just the way it flowed. And so I looked at him and I said, so, you know, like, where should I put my fly? Like, you know, am I going to hit that bank across the river? Where should I put it? And he looked at me and he said, he's all, Derek, just keep it between the banks. And I was just like,
that's my kind of river.
So that's what it's going to be today, right? It's going to be a keep it between the banks type concept today. And it was that, man. It was like, you get your fly in the water and we're catching just some big, big rainbows. And then we got into some big bull trout too. They had followed kind of the salmon up the stream and were kind of, you know, sitting in behind them, feeding on eggs and waiting for some of the flesh and that type of thing. So it was just like, that's kind of, you know, you meet people like that, where it's kind of like, where you're out in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, he had some of my favorite quotes, you know, the keep it between the banks. There was one point, this didn't make it on camera, but because it wouldn't, because I was like, oh man, I got to take a leak. And so, sorry, you may have to edit that out. I said leak, so hopefully that's okay.
Fine. we're PG rated, so that won't.
Yeah, yeah, okay, I'll keep it at that. I'll keep it at that. But like, oh man, I gotta reel up and take a leak. And I reeled up and I went to walk into the bush a bit, and this guide Skeed, he's like, yeah, maybe no, don't go back in the bush. And I'm like, oh, why? He's all, well. He's all, there's grizzlies everywhere, like absolutely everywhere. And the truth is, we actually saw a number of grizzlies that day just feasting on salmon. And so, yeah, so I took his advice and didn't walk kind of back.
I'd be off the back of the boat. Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You're saving your life, right? Yeah. By doing that. So
that's good. Now, where was Northern Lights?
Oh, that's Northern Lights Lodge is up in a little place called Likely British Columbia.
Okay.
Which is like the smallest little town, if you could even call it that. It might be even more of a village. And it's
so unlikely you're going to be in Likely.
Unlikely you're going to be in Likely. I love that, Rob. That should be like their hashtag or their slogan for their town. But yeah, it's this little tiny town, and it's right at the end of this big fjord lake. I think probably one of the biggest fjord lakes in BC, maybe. Wow. Anyways, it's right there, and it's just like, yeah, it was so much fun filming up there. It was just it was just a real treat to be a part of something like that.
Well, that was super fun, and that was just part one. Tune in tomorrow or live on your favorite podcast player for part two, where we chat about all the great personalities around the Fly Fusion magazine. We talk briefly about the International Fly Fishing Film Festival, IF4, and chat about his awesome new book called Last Summer on the Stage. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be a great part two episode. And before I sign off, if you guys want to be part of the worldwide film festival tour, please check out flyfilmfest.com for the full schedule of showings.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. For past episodes, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us.